better, wasn't it? Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm your host, Connor Southwell. Full roster of our Norwich City correspondents to bring you some reaction to today's 2-2 draw against Blackburn. Paddy Davitt, Samuel Seaman, Adam Harvey. We are in our new Pinken podcast studio, much like Norwich City themselves. It is a work in progress. You can see we've managed to retain some of the aspects that were in our backdrop last year. We've still got Darren Eady back with us for another season, sporting his Radio Canary cap. We've got Adam Eader, well, formerly of the parish, with a canary through his head. And then a new addition to the left, which is, I'll try and map out for audio listeners behind, Mr. Davitt and Mr. Harvey, is Alex Tetti at the top of a stepladder, which we are using as a metaphor for Norwich City taking their various steps to success this season. So that is why that is there. It's probably not going to be long term. Bear with us whilst we get some other stuff in, which hopefully we will in the next few weeks. But this is a bit of a better space for us. And we didn't have a lot of choice. Let's put it that way. Paddy, football wise, Norwich City 2-2 draw this afternoon against Blackburn. You can probably separate the two elements, probably frustration in terms of the way the result ended up, but in terms of performance, probably a lot more optimism this week. Not that that was hard, really.
No, before we get into that, Connor, I'm surprised you glossed over what we've spent the last half an hour doing, which is
remaking a scene out of Friends.
Right, okay, yeah. No, I was thinking more to paint the picture. We're at Archant Towers, formerly Archant Towers, NewsQuest Towers now, forgive me, and we're in the basement now, but our old office was on the first floor. So we've been up and down in the lift about five times for these backdrops, which doesn't work on audio, but the ones I'm pointing at, and this very sofa that me and Adam are sitting on. So if anybody is thinking we're not very good at what we do for a living, but want some removal people, then I reckon we can probably turn around to that, because the way we were getting things into the lift was pretty impressive, I thought, you know, and through the doors over there. So, yeah, so if we're a bit out of breath, there's a reason for that. What was your question again?
Yes, it was. We've definitely, if it all goes wrong, then we've got another career, which is good. Football wise, you could split it into two. Result frustrating, probably, from the position that Norwich City are in. Performance encouraging and a lot more signs of life and optimism compared to last week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you want to draw a parallel with Oxford, it was night and day. If you bundle in Stevenage as well in between. Not perfect, but yeah, and Johannes himself said it. I think it was before Oxford. It's not going to be perfect for reasons we all know. But he was quite measured post-match and broke it down as that disappointed result. But he felt a period in the first half, which we all felt watching it, you know, where Blackburn were a little bit too much in the ascendant in terms of possession. He thought Norwich were too passive there and allowed them to set the tempo, which is not how he wants his teams to play at the opposition's pace. That aside, second half, he thought was very, very good, with, of course, the sting in the tail of the Blackburn equaliser. But in terms of the elements of what he wanted them to carry out on the pitch, he was very happy with that overall. So, yeah, I mean, I take my measure really by, I thought the reaction at the final whistle was very telling. And in regards of very positive from the fans who were there, and plenty to stay behind as well for the subsequent sort of lap of appreciation that Johannes and the players and the staff did. And you know, that tells me that in the main, these two home games under this new head coach, they're beginning to like what they see. And why wouldn't you? Because there's some real positive elements within that, of course, and we'll dig in due course in this record. Some persistent themes that are a little bit troubling, is probably not too strong a word, defensively in terms of goals conceded. So, yeah. But I think for three games in now to the new era, far more positives and negatives, and I think that, albeit while it feels disappointing and they've maybe let 2 points slip today given the manner of how late Blackburn equalised, I think overall, if you'd been at these two Carrow Road games, Stevenage and then earlier today Blackburn, you'd be pretty encouraged for the season ahead, I think.
Yeah, it's big picture, isn't it? A draw today, you can argue that either way. I felt Norwich probably should have gone on to win the game given the chances they had, the territory they had in the second half, but equally feel, as I said, in the big picture, where they need to get their performance levels to and the style of play they're trying to implement, this felt like a really important step, Sam. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it had probably similar positives to that Stevenage game in midweek, but the fact that they managed to do it against, obviously, Championship opposition, I think meant a great deal more than winning in the Carabao Cup first round did. So to see them actually applying the sorts of principles and the style of play that they're aiming for in this context, I think was really encouraging, because we've seen a lot of it out of context. We've seen it in pre-season, in the Cup, as I mentioned. And of course, we've seen it go very wrong against Oxford last week. And although obviously there were plenty of areas that Norwich could improve on, I think the defensive weakness has passed nobody by, based on the way that they've been conceding goals, and not only the number, but sometimes the manner of it as well. But the fact that we could see the positives in the right context, that's going to be the main context for Johannes Hovtorup and his players going forward, I think gave those fans real encouragement. And as Paddy mapped out with the feeling from fans post-match, as you've just mapped out as well, there was a willingness to see this as a positive and a recognition that it was a step in the right direction, which, you know, to give everyone credit, wouldn't usually be the natural reaction to an 87th minute equaliser when you've been in front at home. So it's good to see that sort of patience that we talked about being practised, but also to see that the players and the team are giving those fans something to cling on to as well. And it does feel like right now they're taking a lot of steps to get to where they want to get to.
Yeah, and within that, and I think this is why the crowd is such a crucial element, because we talk about buy-in. It is a style of play that is going to need that. And I felt it was encouraging, because there have been times in recent years, and I think we saw it under Dean Smith, we certainly saw it under David Wagner as well, where Norwich teams would try to play out, or they would try and invite a press, and that got quite a frustrated reaction from the crowd. There wasn't that today. There were players taking risks, they were dropping off, they were receiving balls in positions that sometimes it made your heart race a little bit, but they stuck with it. There was a patience, there was a willingness to accept that it was part of how they were going to play and how they are going to play going forward as well. Adam, you're all the way over there. You feel like miles away from me, so I'm going to have to sort of throw the microphone over to you. But in terms of maybe the elements that weren't so good, and I think Sam touched upon it there, those defensive elements, because there are, and we definitely expected this 3 games into what this era looks like. Defensively, there is still a soft underbelly there. The 2 goals that they conceded today, we could probably isolate individually, but collectively as being avoidable, being preventable, just looks all a little bit basic at the moment from a defensive perspective, as I lean over.
Yeah, I think it's obviously another sort of work in progress. Obviously, they brought in Jose Cordoba. We've not really seen much of him yet. Obviously, of course, he did get his sort of first competitive minutes today, and I think that's a huge plus. Someone who's going to be comfortable on the ball and sort of obviously recruited for this new style of play and for Johannes Hovtorup. And I thought there were some positive signs from him in his sort of shortish cameo. But then, as you mentioned, that the mistakes were still there. I think Shane Duffy got caught out a couple of times today. And maybe that is sort of a signal of sort of eras that are still spanning over different managers. You know, obviously a player that was recruited by David Wagner. And I just think in terms of what Norwich defenders now need to be good at it is comfortable on the ball and probably, you know, a little bit of maybe a turn of pace, which I think Cordoba's obviously going to have as well, which Duffy doesn't have. They got caught out. And it's frustrating, I think, for fans, because the attacking stuff has been so positive, but the defensive stuff is maybe still under the microscope a little bit in terms of how poor it's been. But I want to see a settled back line now, really. I think that's not really helped. You look at last week, you know, you got Grant Hanley in there and Shane Duffy. Today it's Duffy and Doyle, and then obviously switch it round during the game, and, you know, Doyle goes back to left back, and then obviously Cordoba comes in. I just think maybe once the transfer window's shut and hopefully players are back available and he gets a settled back four and they know exactly what's expected from them, I'm hoping then maybe these mistakes will become few and far between, and maybe that attacking elements will then, you know, bear more fruit for Norwich in terms of, you know, hopefully 3 points on more occasions than not.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you referenced this post-match. He's not really had an opportunity since he's come in the building, really, to have a look at different defenders in different, and certainly the combination he would like. You go back to Austria where, you know, they were hoping to see Jose Cordoba, and I can't remember who was going to play alongside that day, but it was Callum Fisher was in there, and they had to pull both of those out in the morning of the game because of fitness and illness-related issues. And you go back all through pre-season, Cordoba's been at the Copa America, came back late. Doyle, they didn't get him in before the first game. All of these various elements probably contribute to that to an extent, and maybe why this is defensively looking a little bit suspect. But Paddy, there is a lot of focus, and as there was last week, on Grant Hanley, on to Shane Duffy, and I sort of, not feared, that's the wrong word, but I did wonder whether this would become a topic for conversation.
that not so much around the experienced players as such. I think that's maybe a subplot to this, but that right-sided centre-back position at the moment. Tried Hanley there last week with Duffy, to be fair. I don't think either of those, and I'm sure they would be the first to put their hand up and admit it wasn't their best day at the office or anywhere close to that. Today, Duffy again, you look at the first goal, there's an inability to get close to Gueye, then drops off too much, then gets basically beaten by Pace. The second one, Ahashi gets a run off him, although, you know, you could argue about Doyle not shutting down the cross, but all of it comes from Norwich being a little bit transitional because Jack Stacey loses the ball high up the pitch and then they have to shift across. But it feels like there's going to be a lot of conversation around Shane Duffy because of those elements, but equally because of the distribution point as well. Do Norwich not have an issue at right centre-back, but is there now a major question mark around where they go with that? Because you've obviously given Grant Hanley a go, Shane Duffy a go, you've got Brad Hills in the background. What do you make of where Norwich are with that right-sided centre-back at the moment?
Well, you map it out very well, Connor. And I'll go back to Oxford's first goal, right-sided channel, wasn't it? You know, Harris, was it the boy who's profited from Grant Hanley's indecision? Then he's far too easily checked back inside Shane Duffy on that occasion again today. Right channel, and it wasn't just Duffy. I thought Kenny McLean potentially could have closed it down at source just around the halfway line as that counter was in progress. Once they started to move through the gears, I mean, Duffy's never getting back to edges, and that is a concern because you referenced it, or might be Sam referenced it earlier already in the discussion, that Cordoba has that turn of pace. Krizeni, so we're told, was acquired because he's comfortable in one-on-one, defending large spaces, because the nature of how Torrop wants to play this game now, it is risk and reward and it is high tariff, and particularly with your defenders, what you're asking them to do and the spaces that they're being asked to defend on the pitch. That's not Shane Duffy for me. That's not really probably Grant Hanley now. They're stages of their careers. I think that mobility, that athleticism, that turn of pace. So if that is moving forward, what Torrop demands from his, particularly centre-backs, then they don't fit the template for me. And then it's the more intriguing element of this is two experienced players, contracts this season and beyond. What happens to them? Do they want to be put to the side at their stages of careers, not playing regularly? Do they surely want to go out and play football? The whole dynamic about two very probably experienced voices in the dressing room and how that plays out. You know, we've had already this season, you know, sort of the test, if you want to put it that way, to his authority from the John Rowe incident. And you can be sure that there'll be players in and around that dressing room environment are now looking very early on at Torrop and how he handles certain situations and how he deals with certain individuals as well. And, you know, that would be a brave call if you're making your mind up or you're reaching a position which potentially means no Duffy, no Hanley, purely in terms of their status maybe and standing within the group. But then you have to look at what you see with your eyes, and that can't continue. You know, the goals that they're giving away, the lack of comfort it feels in possession as well. It's very laboured. I mean, that spell I touched on earlier when Blackburn were moving the ball with pace. I mean, they were playing Torrop football better than Torrop side for that 15-20 minute spell, and their defensive players were moving the ball on very quickly. They were very comfortable left and right hand side of the pitch, and Norwich weren't able to close the spaces and get in their faces and press them. You contrast that with when Norwich were building up from the back, it was a definite difference in speed and tempo. So, yeah, I think whether he felt he'd be at this point this early on, but I think he has a massive decision to make now. And I said it on the walk back up, I don't think Jaden Warder does any worse based on what we saw against Stevenage. And I know it was Stevenage, not Blackburn today. He doesn't do any worse than Duffy today or Grant Hanley. So you've got Brad Hills in the mix as well. I can understand maybe Torrop's reticence to a degree because Cordoba's new to the team, new to the building, so is Doyle. You've got Kellen Fisher, if you talking about more broadly, and Krizeni, but very young options. So whether he's tipped at the start of the season towards more experience, that's understandable, but you cannot continue because it's detrimental both in terms of Norwich keeping goals out of their net, but also in terms of their build-up play. So if those two elements aren't functioning as they need to, then surely something has to change and change quickly because it's basically going to hamper what Norwich are trying to do, which is so pivotal to a Torrop Norwich City side. So, yeah, we'll see how that one plays out. But put it this way, if Grant Hanley and Shane Duffy continue at this performance level, they cannot remain in that team.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that as well, what was pertinent, particularly last week, I thought more so last week than maybe this week, and I think you could see it in terms of the statistics. Duffy had 90-odd touches, I think, which is about 30 more than any other Norwich City player. Opposition are quite happy with him and having the ball and happy to essentially let him have the ball and almost set themselves ahead of him to allow him into an error, to force him into an error, as to use that as a trigger to then go and spring forward. So again, that creates almost a tactical issue then that they need to square off. And of course, there are ways to do that. You go back to what Daniel Farker did in the second title winning season. Grant Hanley was a regular in that side alongside a ball player in Ben Gibson at that stage. And he had Max Aarons to his right, Gibson to his left, and Ollie Skip in front of him. So you can square it off, and there are ways that you can get the best of what Shane Duffy offers, which is physicality, it's aerial duels. Maybe the second goal doesn't document that, but I think that was more of a physical issue than an aerial issue, because he does give you a presence. But yeah, it's an interesting trade-off, Sam, because I think we saw on Tuesday night probably better in terms of possession with Warner and Hills there, but they probably lost a little bit physically and in terms of in the box. And yet you go with a more experienced player and you maybe get that element in terms of aerially and set pieces. I thought they looked relatively comfortable this afternoon. Still structurally for me a couple of issues to resolve, but not anywhere near as much danger as they did. But then you don't get the ball playing element, so this is the trade-off that he's got at the moment.
Yeah, and I think it shows that you're not in the best position when the discussion turns to things like, would it be much worse if, which is basically the terms that we're discussing sort of Brad Hills and Jaden Warner in now. And as much as there was this positivity about youth earlier on in the summer and this optimism that players like Hills and Warner would be involved, it now almost feels like an emergency backup plan, which I think ideologically isn't what Norwich fans wanted to see. And I don't think it comes from a place of Torup not trusting young players, as it felt it was with David Wagner last season. But he clearly feels that there is some way to go for one of those two, whichever one probably stays in the squad, because you can't see both of them being in the senior squad for the rest of the season. It's about the amount of trust that he has in one of those two to start on a regular basis. And it feels like he doesn't quite have that trust right now. And I suppose it also shows that defence is still a priority, and that it is still an important part of his philosophy, because as much as he talks about attack first and possession-based play, and everyone wants to see that, when you choose somebody like Shane Duffy or Grant Hanley over somebody like Jaden Warner or Brad Hills, it does show that you do still want those capabilities. And I actually thought, in a sense, for that period where Blackburn were looking pretty good in the first half, that Norwich did struggle with that physicality at times, not maybe necessarily in that defensive area, but you looked at the likes of Gabriel Forsyth, even Emmanuel Forson a little bit, sort of in those earlier periods. And I felt they did lose out a few times to the more experienced, maybe slightly stronger Blackburn midfield. And you can see how in the Championship it affects games, even if you try and make it about possession and attacking, you can see that physicality is still an important part of achieving that. So you can see the reasons why maybe he would turn to that, but equally, when it completely dismantles the philosophy that you're trying to impart to these players, and it stops you doing what you want to do, and that's another important part, is the fact that those 90 touches aren't purely from the fact that teams want Shane Duffy to have the ball. It's the fact that he's part of the first line after Angus Gunn. Realistically, how it's going to work is Angus Gunn plays a short ball to one of those centre-backs, and very often it's Shane Duffy. And when you have somebody who can't quite play that style in that critical area of the pitch at the start of that ball-playing method, if you like, then it renders the whole thing kind of unnecessary and ineffective, because they can't then get the ball into the players who do have more of those capabilities. Whereas if you have a striker, for example, who maybe isn't as used to that type of football, it might be a problem in terms of the number of goals they score, but at least they'll get the opportunity to be in the right position one time in every five. Whereas with Shane Duffy, it feels like Norwich are, and Grant Hanley as well, Norwich are in that position of not being able to progress the ball from the start of those attacks a lot of the time. So it does feel like they're almost in contrast to what Torup wants, but equally he's talked about the ability to almost teach old dogs new tricks and the fact that not only young players can improve. So I'm sure he'll be hoping, as well as considering other alternatives, that he might be able to progress these players and get them more used to the sort of football that he wants to play.
Yeah, we've made this point a few times. He did have a 35-year-old as part of his defence at Nordsjælland. So I don't necessarily think it's an age thing. I don't want to make this an age conversation. I think it's an ability one. And whether, you know, Norwich, there's a few weeks left, whether they feel they need to go for a right-sided option at this stage, but then you leave yourself quite heavy, and I'm not quite sure at this stage who does take a Grant Hanley, who does take Shane Duffy with 2 years left, and therein is a little bit of the issue. And plus, I think for all of, particularly Grant Hanley, for all of the comments about maybe where he is or isn't as a player at the moment, he's an exceptional captain and really well respected in that dressing room, and such a massive part for Torup in terms of buy-in. So therein is a little bit of the challenge that he's got amongst all of those, and these players I'm sure will play valuable parts in various stages this season. Adam, in terms of the two goals that Norwich scored, because I thought both were very, very good for different reasons. The first one is Callum Doyle not just winning the ball but then playing a beautifully threaded pass through to Josh Sargent, who almost furiously finished it. It was almost a finish born of anger of the ones that he missed in the first half. And the second one, again, Sargent plays a massive role in it, but comes really from Norwich City's left-back position. Brilliant pass from Onel Hernandez. Brilliant surge from Sargent. Brilliant exchange of passes. And then Borja Sainz has a tap-in. In terms of those two goals, those are what we want to see, aren't they, moving forward? I'm sure what Johannes Hoftorup wants to see in terms of his blueprint as well.
Yeah, I felt they kind of picked the tempo up a little bit around that sort of time, and they were moving the ball a little bit quicker, and that sort of opened up the spaces and allowed them to create the opportunities that they sort of had in that spell. And yeah, as you mentioned, you know, the Sargent goal was kind of the catalyst, I think, for a little bit of momentum in the game for Norwich. You know, they've sort of had all these opportunities in the first half, him particularly, where he probably on another day buries 3 of them. Just wasn't looking like his day. You know, he gets the ball in that position, and I think we've all seen it, you know, at numerous times that he's able to finish in those sort of areas. He's, you know, one of the, if not the best striker in the Championship at the moment in terms of, you look at his numbers last year, I think if it wasn't for injuries, I think he would have got more. So he could be a crucial player, and that finish, yeah, that sort of got the crowd really back on side. I thought the noise levels picked up, and then from that moment on, it sort of allowed them to then sort of, you know, obviously create the second goal, which, as you mentioned, was well crafted again. And the ball across from Sargent was absolutely on the money for Borja Sainz to tap home. And, you know, it's a shame, obviously, then that they couldn't hold out and you know, get all 3 points. But for me, that was, you know, real sort of positives. You then add that on to the Stevenage game and some of the really well crafted goals from that evening as well. And I think, you know, you look at that, and for me, that is the blueprint moving forwards. It's sort of quick on the transition, you know, abilities to find spaces, and then, you know, the players they've got, they have still got some very good attacking players, and I'm sure they're going to be bringing some more through the door before the window ends. And I think, you know, for as much as that we can sort of criticise the defensive side, I think we're going to see lots of goals this season, and that's probably something that a lot of fans maybe last season felt that this Norwich side was lacking a little bit, particularly even at home. You know, they were sort of leaving Carrow Road after sort of narrow victories and maybe not feeling, you know, excited by the football they watched. I think we're going to see much more exciting football and lots more goals.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be dull to watch this year. What is it? 3 games in, what, 6 goals? Is it 6 goals? Yeah, 6 goals, 7 conceded. It's yeah, it's going to be fun, I think, in terms of how it all pans out. And Paddy, in terms of some of that attacking play, and particularly the play in possession, that was maybe, there were a lot of criticisms last week, but it was one of the major strands, that maybe lack of identity that they showed at Oxford, that lack of maybe, not buy-in, that's the wrong word, but maybe lack of understanding of perhaps their individual roles or what they were trying to do in possession. That was much more evident today in not just the goals, which were very, very well crafted. There were other phases where, probably minus that spell in the first half, where that 20 minutes where I think Torup said they went a bit passive and almost handed control to Blackburn, probably coupled with the last 10, 15 minutes or so after their second goal, where looks very much like tired legs and minds, and we'll go on to maybe where their squad is at currently. But there were more positive signs broadly in terms of that performance. We saw towards the end of the game probably that back three that we spoke about, and Doyle tucking in for the left back and Stacey pushing on. So some of that structural stuff that Torup wants to see was a lot more evident today, and that is why there is probably a lot more optimism walking away from Carrow Road today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the first Stevenage aside, that was the first real sort of test, stress test for it, championship environment, team who'd scored 10 goals, was it, in League and Cup ties. I know that Smodic's moved on the eve of the game, but nevertheless, and you can see that confidence in their play, particularly in that first half, high point from a Blackburn perspective. And it'll be interesting where they go now under Eustace the rest of the season in terms of ambitions. But yeah, you just see, for me, I couple the Stevenage game and what we saw earlier today together, because it was in both just little slivers. I mean, memorably the second goal the other night, that Jaden Warner started it under pressure, beats the press, bang, bang, bang on El Hernandez. And there was two or three of those elements today. You could argue that Sainz goal, very similar, mm-hmm. in terms of the absolute speed and the instinctiveness that they move from the edge of their own box to the opposition penalty area. And there was one or two other, there was a lovely passage in the second half, and it was curtailed because Hernandez, who was going on the overlap, was hauled down and the player got booked. But I think McLean was involved in that, maybe even Doyle. And just, it's almost like you see, it's like the veil is lifted and you see maybe that what they're working on day in, day out at Colney, and what they have been since Torup came together with this group. But it's just going to take time, and it's that tilting the balance from almost painting by numbers. And maybe there's one or two players. I think Science on occasion today looked a little bit like, oh, I need to be in this position of the pitch, and it was all a bit forced. Whereas, you know, maybe he got a little bit of confidence from the second half, and then he was a bit more like the player we identified with last season, you know, just almost going with the flow, free-flowing. And it's going to take a block of games, I think, for collectively them to get to that point where it is just second nature and it is just players knowing where they need to be on the pitch, and then when they receive the ball, what they need to be doing with it rather than thinking about it when the ball's coming to them. So, yeah, I think there's a real, real exciting brand of football there just underneath the surface. But your point is valid that, you know, it's going to need probably post-transfer window and then the clarity in terms of the squad and who's here and who's not here. But also what we saw at the end of the game where I think staples, you know, Doyle maybe on the left-hand side, Cordoba left-hand side of the defensive two in the middle of the park, and Stacey on the other side, we've gone behind them. And obviously, you know, not to reprise the debate we've just had, but just feels like maybe there's one spot up for grabs in that back four. And then moving into midfield, I thought Nunes was good again today. You know, he feels like he's a Torup type player in that midfield area. You know, very good in tight spaces. He's quite comfortable having the ball with players around him because he can paint pictures, and he's also got the technical ability, short range, long range passing. You know, McLean's an interesting one because he does add that physicality we were maybe referencing that when Blackburn pushed him around a little bit. I mean, he is the one in that centre of the park who offers that. But whether he's quite on the same wavelength, I'm not sure still. Although I thought he was decent today. And Forson was a bit of a disappointment, but I think you have to cut in some slack. You know, he's had a bit of a whirlwind 7-8 days since arriving from Austrian football, and it looked like it passed him by a little bit today, but that might just be a little bit of weariness, a bit of legginess, you know, the schedule that he's had in the last week or so. But you'd think he will inject that drive and dynamism that they're looking for. And, you know, it was brilliant to see Sargent doing what he was doing, because I think he is fundamental to how you can unlock a team who are going to create chances, but crucially have somebody at the top end of the pitch who can finish them. And okay, today wasn't quite his day, albeit he scored and had an assist. But you know, if he continues in that vein and they crucially can keep him beyond the window, then I think he's going to really enjoy himself playing in this side, because it is all set up for a player like Josh Sargent, I think. And so for me, more evidence of where we're going to, but again, reminder that we're very early in this journey, and not all the pieces that we saw on the pitch today will necessarily be the ones when maybe we get to 6 months into the season. You know, you might actually see a very different looking Norwich lineup when we get past this window and the January window. But you can see the fundamentals are now bedding in, and it's just going to be a process. And there's no real way of short-circuiting that. You need players to... It's one thing understanding it on the pitches at Colney, but actually there again today, and then next week, Sheffield United, another stiff championship grade test, and on we go. And it's only in that environment that really we get the sense of a group of players who understand intuitively what this head coach and his coaching staff want from them. And crucially, are able to actually put it into practice. But good signs, but work ahead, I think.
Yeah, two points I pick up from that. I think structurally you're right, because it does still feel like, as you said in the back of the mind, I think it's a very different way of attacking compared to what they had last year, which was quite, how do we be polite, it was quite off the cuff, I think. This year it is about ball is in X position, you need to be in Y position. And it is, I think, just players thinking about where they need to go. And once that becomes a little bit more... a little bit more ingrained in them, that's when you can then add the creativity, and that almost becomes second nature. So that probably feels like the element that comes with time. I think Sargent, I agree, such a threat. I thought he's, and today was a good example of it, his movement off the ball has improved no end since when he first arrived at this football club. But equally, he's a threat now in front, he's a threat in behind, he's a threat in between. He must be a nightmare to play against, because he's quick, he's strong, he can take the ball in, he can run in behind. It's really difficult, I think, for defenders to really know how best to handle him and his capabilities. Sam, just to end part one, we've got to mention Gabe Forsyth, because we've got a host of other stuff to speak about. 18 years old, only just as well, I think, earlier this month. It's incredible where he's come from, which was, you know, we were talking about some of the young players at the start of pre-season. His name definitely wasn't amongst them. To be in the second game of the Championship season and starting ahead of Abu Kamara, who had a very good loan at Portsmouth, starting ahead of Onel Hernandez, who has 4, 5, 6 years of longevity at the club. That's a testament to his capabilities, but probably more so the fact that, OK, there's still, I think, and everyone would acknowledge, 18 years of age, still some elements there that need development, but didn't look out of place and almost scored an absolute worldie.
Yeah, it was something I actually said to Adam when that team news came out, was this was the sort of thing I think everyone was expecting when they first started to hear about what Ben Napper wanted, and then subsequently the appointment of Turup and his strengths previously. I think this is what Norwich fans really want, and they would have been very pleased when they saw that news. As you said, nearly scored an absolute screamer. The technique on that, to be fair to him, was...
Mario Vrančić-esque, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think... probably even further away than Vrančić would have tried, to be honest. How casually he sort of just decided, oh, I'm going to shoot from 30 to 35 yards, I think. That was probably a highlight for him. But I think not out of place is probably the best way of describing it. I'm not sure he looked as proactive as maybe he would have liked to. I'm sure he would have liked to maybe been in some more... attacking positions and found some more searching passes, but I thought he fairly often, in fact most of the time, made the right decision, made the simple decision, played the simple pass that put Norwich in a slightly better position than they were when he got on the ball, didn't make too many massive errors. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the physicality was a side that maybe he struggled with a little bit, but equally, if there's one thing that's slightly easier to add to your game as a footballer, you know, it's not the technical elements like the quality of your ball control or your passing or your shooting. It's probably those physical elements. You know, it's just working hard in the gym over a prolonged period of time. And I think when you've got these sort of fitness professionals around you that these footballers have, that's a lot easier to attain than some of the other skills that are really important and that he already does have. I thought it was really encouraging, and there were probably a few signs towards the back end of pre-season that he was one that they were really keeping an eye on. I found it interesting actually watching your guys chat with Glenn Rudersholm in Austria, that he was the first player he picked out when he was talking about sort of an example for how to bed a young player in. And I'm sure he wouldn't have wanted to give much away then, but it did feel like a moment that suggested he was one they were definitely pleased with. So, yeah, a huge moment for him, a huge moment for his family and for Norwich fans, I think. A lot of encouragement, both on a sort of philosophical level and also just for an individual who now they'll be excited to watch the progression of.
Yeah, I think Turup described it as walking the talk, which I thought was quite nice. It was a team selection today that felt a lot more in his image, as you say, rather than what we've seen. But yeah, what a few weeks for that young man, integrated into the first team, new contract, 18th birthday, Championship debut. First Championship start, just incredible, incredible stuff. Had played senior football in Scotland, but obviously a real significant step up. Part two of the pod, we're going to be dissecting everything, maybe not everything, pretty much everything that happened last week. There's a fair bit of it to get through. See you in a second.
Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. In the wake of the 2-2 draw with Blackburn Rovers, the first at Carrow Road of the Championship season, we of course will be producing these pods after every game. It's been a busy week. There's been a lot happened. We've had outgoings. We've had nearly incomings. We've had not quite a takeover, but certainly the structure of a takeover. I don't think we're going to talk too much about that. There's a whole another podcast that we've done, explain a podcast of what that all means and how it will all work. You can either watch that on our YouTube channel or listen to it wherever you get your podcast. But Adam, is a week in the world of Norwich City. What is it they say about politics? A week is a long time in politics. A week in the midst of a summer transfer window. I'm not quite sure what that feels like. It feels rapid. It's been a busy old week, hasn't it?
Yeah, after quite a sort of not quiet, but more relatively quiet sort of June, July period in terms of, you know, lack of sort of transfer activity per se, and certainly no sort of news of Dealer and Michael stepping aside or anything of that nature. So yeah, it's certainly ramped up in the past week, and I think that's probably a good thing. It's, you know, what fans have maybe been crazing about. I think we sort of saw demands for kits to be released far too much, and maybe a lack of kind of desire for transfer news or certainly anything of that nature. But I think there's lots to be excited about, you know, even kind of the links to incoming strikers and stuff, you know, which I'm sure we'll delve into a little bit more. You know, that kind of thing is something that I'm sure, you know, is on sort of the lips of most Norwich fans at the moment about who they're going to replace Adam Eder with. Obviously, the news of, you know, Dealer and Michael, I'm sure that we'll sort of get more of that maybe when it becomes more of a reality at the moment. You know, it's just a statement. And I think, you know, we've all kind of expected it. Maybe we all got caught a little bit off guard in terms of how quick it's come around and been announced. But I think that's probably, for a relatively new era, it feels even more of another sort of marker of you know what's coming ahead now. It's Ben Napper, it's Johannes Hoftorp, Mark Atanasio's involvement, you know, it's obviously been big behind the scenes anyway, but now he's going to have that sort of almost title attached to that, and I think his input can hopefully drive this club forward, and I think it's, you know, this exciting week we've had and busy week we had, I think it's going to be even busier probably in the sort of next couple of weeks, particularly on the transfer front. I don't get the sort of inclination that it's going to be quiet, so I'm intrigued to see come sort of the windows, you know, shutting in sort of a couple of weeks now, who Norwich are going to have in this squad and maybe who won't be here.
As long as I'm not waiting up until 2:30 for Norwich City to confirm the signings of Danny Bart and Yuzhou Huang, and no offence to either of those players, well, maybe a slight offence to one of them, but yeah, that was not the finest way to do business. So hopefully it's a nice early night, because I think we've got an early kickoff at Coventry the next day, so we could do without that. Let's split this up then. Sam, you're going to take Adam Eder going to Celtic in a moment. Paddy, let's speak about the one that almost happened but didn't. Turkish striker, Ren striker, is it Bergot Yilmarin? Hopefully I've said Yildirim. That's it. We said it right. It was always going to happen. We don't have to worry about it anyway, so that's fine. Interesting one, wasn't it? Because I think, I'm trying to put my days in order now. It's been a busy week. Was it Wednesday, I think, that we reported that he was a player of interest? I think by Wednesday night it felt very much like it was moving the right way, and Thursday it was all off. And this is the world of transfers, isn't it? Because Norwich were hoping to get him in ahead of this game. Clearly that hasn't happened, and so the hunt continues.
Certainly does. And two things: Torup, after today's game, said hopefully by next week, i.e. Sheffield United, that will be resolved. So that at least gives you a sense of how far down the track of Plan B, to call it that they are already, given this was only, you know, like back end of last week. But also in that timeline you painted there, Connor, was Torup's pre-Blackburn, which was Thursday afternoon. And given the noises that were prior to the 24 hours before then about Yildirim and almost could they register him in time for Saturday's, i.e. today's game, it was quite clear that there was something not quite right in terms of Torup's messaging around the striker search, when he was basically saying it won't be before the weekend and we're looking still at our options. We're not sure about kind of the profile we want, bearing in mind, you know, Eder's departure and what they might be looking for in a striker to supplement and complement what they already have in the building. So all of those strands you pulled them together didn't scream that player is going to get pulled over the line. And of course then, a few hours later into Thursday evening and deal off post-medical. But worth stressing that not as a failed medical or anything in that regard. Simply that...
You don't really fail a medical, do you? Risk assessments, aren't
correct.
They?
Which is the best way to look at it, because, you don't actually, in terms of,
pass or fail, really.
Yeah, like a driving test, for example. But that said, the assessment was that not necessarily anything in the here and now to be concerned about, but just something potentially down the track, given... And he hasn't played a lot of minutes, really, of club football in the last few seasons. So there wasn't anything to benchmark his activity against previously in terms of the robustness of withstanding sort of the rigours of playing at a really good level of professional football regularly, consistently, week in, week out. And, of course, the biggest issue in all of this, particularly for a club like Norwich, is the outlay. You know, what they were willing to commit to that deal, could they go ahead if there was anything that might, further down the track, come back to, prove a bit of an issue in terms of that player and his effectiveness for Norwich City. So on those grounds, the deal was off. There was a little bit in Turkey as well, that maybe some of the payment structure around the proposed deal as well, there was a bit of disagreement with the clubs. But the bottom line is, he unfortunately is not, for that lad I'm sure, is not going to be coming to England and playing for Norwich City in the Championship. So that door closes. Interestingly, we were sort of, at least the sense was, that he actually spanned the two eras, the Weber and the Napa era. He was, and we know they have, reams of recruitment resource there in terms of analysts and data and what have you. And albeit they might be accelerating those processes under Napa, but this was a guy who'd been flagged up to 2 years ago, by all accounts. So that predates Napa's arrival. And it just shows you the amount of work, the body of work from a data perspective, but also I'm sure there was a lot of eyeballs on him, assessing him in the flesh, as it were, and all that fed into, they felt he was a player who would suit a Torup system. Alas, it wasn't to be, but, and I think this is probably where it now moves on, is that at the start of summer, there was a sense, maybe internally, that they would have to scenario plan for an Eder departure, but also maybe a Sargent departure. And of course, we know there was MLS interest. Torup confirmed that on Thursday. That window is now closed in America, so that isn't an issue between now and the end of our window. That isn't to say that there won't be other interest, but in the here and now, you get the sense, and it was visibly underlined again today, that Sargent is going to be around and he is a big part of it, unless something changes between now and August the 30th. So if that's the case, and at the start of the summer they were scenario planning for two potential departures and putting in the huge back catalogue of work preparatory required, it feels like what they've done now is maybe almost open up the drawer and pull out the dossier for player number two, and now they're looking to progress. To be fair, Torup did again couch it this afternoon in terms of still assessing options, plural, but I think the reality is, if they'd identified Yildirim and another, then they're probably going to be looking at another, and that'll become clear, I think, in the days ahead. So you'd have to be fairly confident, given the speed of how they switched out Sara and Forson, and obviously if this had gone to plan, then Yildirim would have been, Eder very swiftly turn around, that, if Thorup is hopeful that Sheffield United is going to have a new striking option in the building, then it's going to be another few busy days. Unfortunately, we're not in for a quite a few days after last week, which we could all do with, I think. But and then we'll see which direction they go. But I think all I would say is, zoom out, and everything that Napa has done this transfer window, the ins, the outs, the digging in, the protecting the club's positions in various scenarios, that should all, if you're a Norwich fan, you should have supreme confidence that, whoever they go for, then they will go and get that deal done, and then we'll see. Then it's up to Torup and said player to see if they can put any pressure on Sargent, because I think even whoever comes in the building, he's not going to suddenly start playing with two up top, two strikers out and out. So if it is a striker, which Yildirim was, then good luck trying to dislodge Josh Sargent, I would say.
Yeah, I quite like the fact that they didn't go ahead with it, because I think this maybe is the difference of where they are now, maybe to 2-3 years ago. We don't know for sure, but it feels like something that probably would have been done anyway, maybe a couple of years ago. It feels like this time, and we mapped it out, the outlay, the fact they were going to offer him a substantial contract in terms of length as well. It's just the fact that there was a risk there that they didn't feel they could take. I'm glad that they didn't. I think that shows probably where they're at now, the fact that they felt comfortable and willing enough to say, actually, no, we can't do that. Let's move on and go and pursue someone else, I think is really encouraging. Sam, the one confirmed out that we had this week was Adam Eder to Celtic, which has rumbled on, I think, maybe even longer than all summer. But you have to say, when you look at the fee that Norwich City have got for him, 8.5 million guaranteed, plus a potential another million in add-ons to take it to 9.5. I mean, just exceptional money for where he is at his career. So you can kind of understand, again, maybe going on that theme in terms of their business at the moment, and pertinent maybe to the John Rowe example that we haven't spoken about, Ben Napper is clearly somebody who wants to hold out and get value. So probably a deal that everyone is sat here feeling quite pleased about from all sides.
Yeah, I think it's almost the definition of a move that works for everybody, and it's been a success for Norwich in both the short and the long term, really, when you look at some of the fees involved in what would have been loan to buy options in January. You know, they weren't getting close to this sort of money. So the fact that Norwich held their nerve back in January, decided that they would let Eder go on loan to Celtic, even though there wasn't that option, and the fact that he was, you know, a decent part of David Wagner's plans at that point, that's the short-term success. But also you look at some of their philosophical goals and their long-term aims, and that's to basically become a club that grows their own talent out of their academy, sells them for significant profit, and that's exactly what they've done with Adam Eder. I think, you know, as you said, they're really 8.5 million plus is fantastic money, I think, from Ben Napper for a striker who, you know, before that Celtic loan was just a championship second choice, quite a comfortable second choice behind Josh Sargent as well, and somebody who, even when he had the real opportunities to go on and become the first choice and make the most of those opportunities, and we've written about this countless times, I can't think there are too many topics I've written more features on than this is Adam Eder's chance to really make it at Norwich City. And for somebody who hadn't really taken any of those chances, to be sold a few months after he first left the club for 8.5 million rising, I mean, that's fantastic business by Mr. Napper. And obviously it's hard to judge him on the work that he's done buying players as of yet, because the one that we've really seen for an extended period was Sidney van Hooijdonk. And I think we all understand both the mitigation around that and the fact that obviously it's only one transfer that we can see. But I think based on the sales and the outs so far, the way that the Gabriel Sara deal ended up going for Norwich, this one, and the Jonathan Rowe situation that you sort of mentioned, which I actually think has gone pretty well in Norwich's favour, that evidence of a body of work Norwich fans can assess has gone really well. So I think Ben Napper has gone up in quite a lot of fans' estimations. His reputation is clearly increasing already. And yeah, it's fantastic work, I think, from him to get this sort of deal. And although there is a little bit of a sense that Eder never quite reached that potential that everyone talked about him having, you look at the number of players that were in their academy that don't even go on to become professional players. To sell somebody to Celtic for 8.5 million is fantastic work, and testament to the effectiveness of this model when it goes right.
And finally, Adam, John Rowe, I think we've got to speak about him. Obviously not involved again today, and it'll be interesting to see maybe how the next week develops, but another bid from Marseille knocked back, but a slightly different structure in terms of loan to obligation. It's going to be fascinating to see how that resolves itself. So I'm going to sort of ask you, if you had 50p to put on it, how do you see it resolving itself in what we've got 2 weeks left of the window or so?
Yeah, that's a really difficult question, I think, at this moment in time. You know, I sort of felt there was a slight easing in Torrup's kind of body language and manner towards John Rowe after the Stevenage game. I mean, Paddy put the question to him, and he sort of said, you know, there would be maybe an opportunity if he came forward. And I think certainly in the pre-match to this game as well, in the press conference, he sort of almost reaffirmed that point, that, you know, if John Rowe acts and behaves in the right manner and then puts himself in the right headspace. And maybe Monday, I think this week, you know, when they have the team meeting, there might be a willingness to get him back in that dressing room. And he's obviously got to try and get the buyback from all of his fellow teammates. You know, I think he'd have obviously probably, you know, lost a little bit of, you know, other teammates would have lost a little bit of respect for him for the way he handled that situation. But, you know, just him as a character from sort of, you know, certainly previous to this, any dealings we've had with him, I certainly feel like he will have realised he's messed up and maybe will have that little bit of remorse. And I don't know, I think, you know, as much as there was an anger in the fan base at the time, I feel like if he gets back on the pitch and is, you know, back to the John Rowe that we know from the start of last season and does perform for Norwich City, then I think there will be that willingness for fans to buy back into him as a player. You know, normally he's a one of the more successful graduates from Norwich City's academy, certainly in recent times. So, and that's why he is subject to these bids from Marseille, who obviously are a relatively big side in Europe. And I can understand why that would, you know, slightly maybe twist his head, and maybe, you know, he would. It's probably the first time he's ever had to deal with that sort of level of speculation. I mean, there's been a lot of Premier League clubs touted with him, but never really anything tangible. This is kind of the first time that he's knows there's maybe bids on the table and the opportunity to go and explore something new in obviously a higher league and probably get his name even more sort of banded around. And obviously that could lead him on to bigger things in the future. But intrigued to see how it all plays out now. I feel from, you know, as proven from what Sam mentioned, you know, Ben Napper held out for Adam Eder. I think he's going to hold out for John Rowe as well. And I think that figure's probably going to have to be north of sort of at least it over sort of 12 to the £15 million bracket. And I think, you know, then if he, you know, a club comes forward, whether that is Marseille or another club further on into this window, and those figures do get put down, then as long as Norwich have got those options ready to go again, which, you know, as has been proven by the Forsen deal and the fact they're going to probably recruit another striker straight away to replace Adam Eder, then providing those options are good, I think most Norwich fans would, you know, sort of, as much as maybe this has kind of put a little bit of sort of, you know, a bit of disappointment maybe on his Norwich City career. I think if he did leave and the money was right and Norwich got the right replacement, then I think most fans would see him off and be excited about, you know, potentially a new addition. So I think either way, you know, there's a route that this can work out for Norwich. They either get a new player who's fully hungry and buys into it, but as we saw in pre-season, John Rowe is still a very, very good player. Certainly at this level, he's probably almost too good. So if he gets in the right headspace and is still here at the end of the window, then I think Norwich have still got a real gem in the Championship.
Yeah, and particularly in this system, we've spoken about the attacking productivity. He would absolutely thrive in it, wouldn't he? So, like you say, even Norwich get John Rowe to add to this side, and hopefully one that is in a different headspace. Just think he needs to apologise. I mean, he's 21. We've all been there and all made mistakes when we were 21 and not had that glare of the public on us. So I think there is a route back. But again, it probably starts and ends with him, really. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that resolves. Paddy, finally, really, where do you feel Norwich are still short? Clearly, striker, and I think the fact they ended the game today with Onel Hernandez through the middle, Callum Fisher on the right, and was it Liam Gibbs on the left? I mean, it's quite a remarkable way to finish a game. If anyone had that on any kind of bingo card, then do let us know, and I'll send you a lottery ticket to fill in for me. I think they probably still need a midfield option. I think they probably lack a different type of profile there. They're all quite, not, I'm trying to use a different terminology than short and technical, but they're all quite short and technical. So I think it would, still looking at it, feeling like that man would, Alex Tetti would still get a game if he had on maybe even one knee where he is now. But where are the other areas of this squad that you're looking at and maybe feeling they're a little bit short with, what, yeah, 2 weeks or so to go?
Right-sided centre-back. To go full circle, take my tongue out of my cheek, but if he doesn't trust Warner and Hills at this stage, then, you know, there's a deficit gap there. But I don't get any sense that that's something they're actively looking to do. I think you've touched on it there. I think once a striker's situation is resolved, with the asterisks of, you know, players leaving that they didn't probably think we're going to leave at this stage of the window and have to react. Probably midfield is where the focus is going to be. Yeah, I look around now and they've kind of addressed the left-back situation in terms of the head count and the numbers. But, you know, Doyle clearly looks like a real quality operator in there. So, other flank, you've got Fisher and Stacey. Wide areas, whether John Rowe stayed or not, I still think they've got some good options in there now. And
Well, I think I'd maybe want one more in there, wide-wise.
What, even if John Rowe stays on the... You'd want another winger?
Yeah. I'm selfish, you see. I always want more.
Okay, so yeah, you'd have Science, Rowe, Farsi. Don't forget Farsi.
I'd want another winger.
Ornel Hernandez.
Abu Kamara,
Elliot Miles. Can't discount him now, but Gabe Forsyth has made the transition, so... Yeah, that would seem a bit top heavy to me.
I think they've got quite a few that are similar in wide. I look at it, I feel Hernandez is the only one who's kind of a chalk on the boots width winger rather than sort of an inverted type. I think they could do with another one of those, but I'm probably being really greedy.
Yeah. Or you could go...
Maybe you get an eight who can play that.
You just took the words right out of my mouth there. Hybrid, I was going to say. Yeah, which apparently is... You know, like Forsen, for example, he can clearly play a number of different positions in the middle of the park. Doyle, there's Mr. Versatile, isn't there? So that, I think, is a common thread with the recruitment they're looking at, is that you have that interchangeability in positions. And quite rightly, if you're looking for maybe another box-to-box who could also play comfortably in a slightly wider area or inverted or even further wide, then that would make sense. Yeah, that would make sense. But I just don't see... beyond the striker or maybe your midfielder, I don't see him being that active from here, if I'm honest. Just because I think Torup's probably of a mind now. He just wants everything to settle down now. You know, these are the players I've got. So do we all, yeah. I don't want to throw the pieces back up for the remaining 2 weeks of this window, and if we don't have to, clearly, but and just navigate a path fairly relaxed to August the 30th and then crack on. And then we know he knows... defensively, midfield and forward areas, what I've got to play with for two months or so until January, and then it will start again.
Good stuff. Right, thank you, gents. As we said, 2-2 draw, I think a big step in the right direction. Sheffield United to come next week, which is going to be an absolutely fascinating test to gauge where Norwich are. They've got obviously another week on the training pitch. From there, we'll obviously bring you any updates, analysis, reaction to anything that happens this week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. See you again. Awesome.